Good evening. One of the koans that I really like that appears in our tradition, it's actually part of a poem, which I don't know, but we use the lines as a koan, and it's empty-handed but holding a rake. I'm not sure how we translate that in French. Les mains vides, mais tenant un râteau, c'est ça? A rake? C'est ça? And I can't remember the rest, but the other lines appear as koans as well in our tradition. This koan speaks to me particularly because it brings into question so many things. So it says empty-handed. So we have to look at, okay, what is empty-handed? What is empty? What is a hand? What does it mean to have empty hands? And then yet, so seeming paradox or contrast, holding a rake. So holding, what's that? To hold, and a rake. So what's a rake? And what does that mean to hold a rake? And with our usual ways of thinking, we immediately think, well, it's impossible. If my hands are empty, then I can't be holding a rake. And this is how we usually approach most everything. With a line of, or a pile of, assumptions. Habitual ways of thinking, which streamline the process of living, because then we don't have to think too much, although we're actually thinking a lot by doing that. And it gives us a sense of knowing what's happening in any given situation. Knowing who we are, where we are, what is, what we have, what we don't have, what we're holding, what we're not holding. And at the same time, but we don't often realize this, by doing this, by thinking this way, by attaching to our usual habits and patterns, we rob ourselves of the fullness and the richness of life. Anything that is outside of those borders that we create with our ways of thinking, we miss. Now, if we approach this koan and we just say empty, this is okay, empty-handed. So we could say, okay, from an absolute point of view, I don't have anything. I don't exist. Nothing exists, and everything is empty. You know, we've heard this. We may have even had a glimpse of this. So we say, okay, fine. No rake, no me, no nothing. No hands, nothing. Which we can become attached to, and that just becomes another pattern and another way of approaching things. And from that point of view, then we quickly become nihilistic. Nothing matters because nothing exists. So we can do whatever we want. I mean, I'm pushing this to an extreme. Okay. If we stick to only the holding a rake, we go into shift into another extreme where we want to hold on to everything. We have to hold on to everything. It's mine. This is my rake. I have it. We miss the empty-handed if we only see the holding a rake, which is usually what we see. And if we only see empty-handed, we miss holding a rake. And a rake is very useful sometimes. You know, in a garden when you're raking things, it's like a broom, very useful to clean. I grew up in a place where in the autumn there were many leaves that fell, and the garden in my house would be, at my parents' house, would be full of leaves, and we had to go out there and rake them up. And in those days you could still burn fires, and so we would build big fires in the autumn and burn all the leaves, and it was very exciting. But we needed rakes for this. If we just stay with the empty-handed aspect, we wouldn't say, leaves, no leaves, doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. I don't actually know what my father's logic was for having us rake up the leaves, but everybody did it. So there must be some reason for it, right? And I don't think it was only for aesthetic purposes. I think that in order for the grass to grow, you had to take off the leaves or something. I now, in the house that I live in, we have a garden, but I don't do anything with the rake. So it's my husband who does that. You have a garden, so somebody must rake, right?
We do.
Yeah. Although we now have leaf blowers, right? How do you say that in French?
Un aspirateur à
feuilles. L'aspirateur à feuilles.
Au contraire, un souffleur.
Oui, le souffleur.
It does both, actually.
And also...
Yeah, right. Can decide what you want.
So, and if we were really attached to this souffleur or this rake, and it had to be done just this perfect way at just this moment, and if any leaf was out of place, we would become really upset about it, and it had to be just this perfect kind of rake, we're falling into another pattern there, right? And this koan came up, I was thinking about this today, because yesterday something happened at the refugee center where I was working. I went to work in the, one of the other volunteers who's there every day, is kind of, he's not really in charge, but he knows everything. So when I arrived, he said, why don't you go to the laverie? Place where we wash the clothes for the refugees. And I like to work in the laverie. I really like it. I love to take their clothes, these guys, they bring their clothes, fill in a form, you know, we say, okay, this guy's name, his room, we put it in a bag that has a number on it, wash the clothes, dry them, fold them, put them back in the bag, and then he comes back, gives us his card, we look up his name, it's back 49, we take back 49 and we give it back to him, right? And I really like to do this. I like, even at home, at my own house, I like to do the laundry, okay? So, but I really like to do it for these guys, for these refugees. And sometimes they've been wearing these clothes for who knows how long. They've just arrived at the center. They get some new clothes from the... They're next to the laverie, there's a place where they can get new clothes from another organization. It's not the organization I work for, it's another one. And they get new clothes, and they give their old clothes to be washed, and whatever. So I really like this. So I went to the laverie, and I showed up, and it was a disaster. Everything was mixed up. And there were boxes, cardboard boxes of clothing just there in front of the racks where we usually have all the back, and there were back there too. J'ai expliqué le système de.
Oui.
On prend le linge, on le met dans un bac avec un numéro, on le marque, on le lave, on le remet dans le bac, il revient le chercher. Quand je suis arrivée hier, en plus des bacs qui étaient là, qui étaient lavés, il y avait des cartons pleins d'habits. Et tout était un carreau. Et donc voilà, c'est la situation. So the young man, the other volunteer who was there, said to me, c'est un bordel. It's a chaos. The things this morning when they've come to get their back and they give me the number, the clothes that are in the back are not theirs. And sometimes some of their clothing is in another bag. And sometimes, so these boxes were here this morning when we arrived, and sometimes their clothes are in these cardboard boxes. But not always. Sometimes they can't find their clothes at all. And he said, we don't know how this happened, but apparently what happened was our association that we work for, we close the laundry at 7 o'clock. 19h, c'est fermé, le lavomatique. But the other association, who doesn't do the laundry for the refugees, but they do laundry that people have donated. You know, if you donate clothes to Emmaus or something, it'll end up in a place like this, and it has to be cleaned and everything. They use all the washing machines at night because we're not using them. So they do laundry. And for some reason, which no one understands and no one could explain, whoever was doing it didn't know anything about our system. And the people who were doing our system left at 7 o'clock, but there was still laundry from the refugees in the machines and hadn't been emptied and folded and put in their back. So the people who came and from the other association and did the laundry, they just took all the laundry that was being washed and threw it in the boxes. Or just threw it in a random back that was there. They didn't care if it was 2 or 49 or 13 or 27 in the back. They didn't care. They didn't know anything about it. They didn't even know that everything in one machine belonged to one man and shouldn't be put in a box with stuff from another machine. Total chaos. So, a guy comes, gives me his card to get his laundry. We can't find it. He searches. So we let them, we said, okay, come back behind the counter and you can look in these boxes, because we don't know what that laundry is, you know. And we can't really even speak very well with these guys, so we can't explain to them what the problem is, you know. And sometimes they only arrive the day before. They don't know what the system is either. Somebody just told them they could get their clothes washed here. And they brought their clothes and that was it. He can't find it. He found one of his t-shirts, he found a pair of underwear and a hat or something. He kept saying, my jeans. He was wearing a pair of jeans, but he kept saying, jeans. So I'm going through every box conceivable, every back, every pair of jeans, showing them to him. No. he's devastated. The guy has nothing in this world except that. He gives it to us, and we lose it. I wanted to cry. I was just devastated myself. And I couldn't explain to him what was going on. He could speak a little English, and I said, I just kept saying, I'm sorry. We'll give you some other pants. But for him, it seemed like that didn't really matter, you know. I don't think he cared really so much about those pants. I think he was just so devastated that, you know, he's come all this way. He's trusting this place. He's given the only possessions he has in life, and it's lost. You know, it was tough. And he waited, you know, because on top of it, the association next door, which it's actually the same space, but they have a different, you know, like rideau that comes down metallique in front of their counter. But from our space of the laundry, you can see their place where all the clothes are, you know, all of the new clothes is. And they're supposed to be there. They're usually there at 8, you know, 9 o'clock in the morning, and I don't know until what night, at night. And people, the guys can come, and they all have the right to get a full set of clothing, a coat, shoes, hat, gloves, everything, you know, t-shirts, sweaters, everything, pants, everything, socks. And for some reason it was closed. And we didn't know why. And so we said to him, you can get another pair of pants, but you have to wait till it opens, the place. But it wasn't open. And I didn't know why it wasn't open. And none of the volunteers I was working with knew why it wasn't open. And it's a different association. It doesn't have anything to do with us. So finally, we just went over there, and we took a pair of pants. And we said, you know, we offered them to him. We're not supposed to do that, because they keep track of all of their clothing and everything. But there was one woman from their association there doing laundry the way she was supposed to be doing it, and she also didn't know why they weren't there, and she told us to just go do that. He didn't want them. So we said, okay, come back. You know, maybe your pants will be here. You know, maybe they will show up. We don't know. And he said, no. I'm sure someone... He made it clear to me that he thought someone else took them. Which is possible. You know? Because it was such a mess, someone else was looking for their clothing. They came back there. We don't know if those are their jeans or not. They said, yeah, these are my jeans, and they took them. We don't know, right? So it's possible someone else took them. And he hung around for a while, for like a half an hour, hoping, I think, that somehow a miracle would happen. And then he left with his, you know, t-shirt and pair of underwear and I don't know what else. And I was so outraged that that should happen. I was just so angry that these people didn't do what they were supposed to do. I don't even know who these people are. Or I don't even know really what happened. And I was so angry. At the same time, okay, you know, this koan comes empty-handed but holding a rake. Okay. So what? One piece of clothing or another piece of clothing. Okay, it doesn't matter. And I think some of the volunteers were not quite to that extent, but they were thinking, okay, well, we'll give you another pair of pants. You know, they were just, there's other clothes for you. Without understanding that that piece of clothing was essential, was very important, and represented more, I think, than just a pair of jeans. So I'm thinking, you know, I continue doing my thing. And so then we, the other volunteers, we tried to organize a system where the laundry that we were doing, we knew that it was right. Okay, we knew that the guy brought it. It was number 49. It was in this box. We washed it, we dried it, we folded it, we put it back in the box, we put it on the rack. We knew it was right, so we tried to organize it so that on these racks that we did, that we were in charge of, it was right. So that if people came, they didn't have to look in those boxes for lost clothing. We tried to organize some system. Of course, we don't know after we left what would happen. Fortunately, there was some crossover, so I'm hoping that until 7 o'clock at night. Instead, anyway. And I thought, okay, so what happened here? Probably what we think is that the volunteers for the other association who were there doing the laundry at night, they were probably new. Nobody told them anything. They thought they were doing a good job. They saw all these clothes there, they didn't know what it was. And somebody had told them, okay, for our association, we have to divide it up by size. You have to have big pants here, little pants here, you know, big t-shirts here, little t-shirts here, sweaters here. And that's what they did. They didn't know. And the volunteers who worked for my association, maybe they were new too, and they didn't read the instructions that said, don't start any machines after 15h30 because they won't be done by 19h, right? They threw in laundry at 7 o'clock and went home, probably. I mean, we can only assume because nobody who did anything was there, so. So I say, okay. There's not really blame. At the same time, if we can, most of this happens because of confusion, right? There's confusion. There's confusion in your head, in my head. So I'm not paying attention to rules. I'm not even thinking, okay, well, if I go home at 7 o'clock, and that laundry's in there, well, what's going to happen? You know? I'm not even really paying any attention to who's in which association and what the other people are doing at night. Basically, I'm thinking about myself, and I'm not really seeing what's outside of that boundary, right? Like I said in the beginning. And attached to my way of thinking, my way of being, and I'm not really paying attention to what's around, to the fuller picture. And then, as we say, shit happens. Shit happens anyway, but that's how shit happens. And if I then myself, when I arrive and I find this, and then the guy who sent me there arrived, and I often work with him in the laverie, and he himself is a former refugee. He arrived in France 4 years ago, got refugee status, and now he's looking for a job. He doesn't have work because his papers weren't in order or something. Now he's working there as a volunteer. And so he came back. And when he saw me, he smiled at me. Because he's the one who sent me to the laverie. And he smiled at me. And I said, t'as vu? Did you see? He said, I know. And he said, but I thought you could help if you went there. Which was really nice. I mean, not nice that he sent me into this bordel, but I thought it was nice that he thought that if I went there, I could help. You know, I appreciated that. So I thought, okay, so how can I help? How can I help? So one of the things we did is I suggested this, organizing it so that we know what's right. Not right in we know is in order, right? This guy who sent me there, he didn't even want us to have the refugees come behind the counter and look in the boxes. He said, no, because they'll just take stuff, you know? They might not be their clothing and they might take it. We can't do that, you know? You can hold up the pants and show them, but even that, you know, it's not going to work because then we're really messed up. He left and we didn't really follow that. I was not so much doing that, but the other volunteers were letting them up. So I thought, so how can I help? I can help being empty-handed yet holding a rake. So, seeing the, you know, that's another way of saying it, seeing the oneness of it, seeing that it's all okay, it's all perfect as it is, okay? It gets messed up. This guy's devastated that he lost his clothes, that we betrayed him. I felt like we betrayed his trust. And as one of the other volunteers said, it's really horrible because if I was responsible for it, then I could really say to the guy, I'm so sorry. And she said, but I feel like it's not even helpful for me to say I'm sorry because I didn't do anything, you know? I understand what she meant. At the same time, I'm sorry, you know? It's important to say it and to acknowledge it. And to convey that, even if you can't really understand what I'm saying. I mean, I think the guy was from Sudan or something, and I think he didn't even speak Arabic. Because there's some people around who speak Arabic, and you can translate, and whatever. So the way I could help was empty-handed, yet holding a rake. So completely honor these guys and these seemingly meaningless pieces of clothing. Honor it. And at the same time, not be caught up in those people, they shouldn't have done that, they were bad, this is horrible, you know, and be angry at them and yelling at people, whatever. Another volunteer who's a journalist who worked in Africa years and years and years ago, and who I thought is really interesting because he said to me, you know, and he's covered the refugee crisis as a journalist, and he said, you know, a lot of these people along their way, it's been, you know, who knows how long they've been traveling and how many countries they've gone through and whatever, every time they meet a relief organization like this, they get new clothes and they just throw away the old clothes. Because they don't have any way of cleaning them, and they're not their clothes anyway, you know? They don't have any notion of it being theirs, really. Because they've been living nomadic life, and they, you know, they get new clothing and they throw away the old clothing. And he said, so this, what we're doing here by washing the clothes, is like a first step for them back integrating into ordinary life. And he told me this, you know, like weeks and weeks ago when I was working there in the laverie with him. And we also realized that in the beginning at the center, when it first opened in November, they would, when they arrived, they would get a little kedna that they could put, they have a space in their room that they can put stuff in, and they'd get a kedna. But it wasn't working because people left and take the kedna with them, or they would leave the kedna closed, the lock closed, and take the key, and it wasn't working. So they stopped the lock systems. So these guys don't have anywhere to lock up their things, right? And we realized, because for days and days, they wouldn't come back and pick up their clothes after they got it washed. And we discovered that they were leaving their clothes there so they wouldn't get stolen. Because if they left their clothes in their room, somebody might come in and steal them. So they figured, put it there to get washed. It's safe. When I need them, I'll come and get them. I'll put the other clothes there to get washed, and I'll keep them there. Which was a problem for us because we couldn't keep clothing for 400 men there, you know. So if they all did that, we would be in trouble. So here we were betraying this trust. However, if I hang on to that idea that I've betrayed someone's trust, I can't move on fully and do what needs to be done. I will be attached to this notion of betrayal. The best way to repair that is to acknowledge it, as we say, be at one with, to acknowledge it. And the only way to be one with it is to see both holding a rake and empty-handed. If we don't see both, then we can't be at one with it. And then acknowledge it fully, take responsibility for it, whatever you need to do to be one with it, and move on. Otherwise, I'm dragging, like François Fillon, a whole lot of casserole behind me, right? You know, every betrayal, everything I've ever done, thought, feared, sinned, lied, whatever you want to say, I'm dragging with me. Unless I make one with it and move on. So the way that I could help was to be one with what happened and move on. Organize another system. So Pierre, this journalist, when he arrived, he also was effrayé by what had happened. So he like wrote out the instructions again, and we have like a paperboard where nobody looks at it. You know, it's like the volunteers come and they don't even look at it. Wrote out the instructions again, and underlining, don't put a machine in after 3:30. And we'll see. But this is how. So we hear this beautiful koan, empty-handed yet holding a rake. It's not just some, you know, mystical kind of beautiful thing that is being said. It applies here and now to your life, to every situation in which you find yourselves. It doesn't even have to be an extreme situation like this catastrophe with the laundry. It applies everywhere, every moment. Anyone want to say anything about the koan? Or does anyone remember the other lines from that? Or no, maybe not. I can't remember what it is.
Ce que tu dis, je peux parler en français. Oh, I can try a little in English. It makes me about washing laundry. And it makes me think of people in jail with their laundry, and there has been a movie which has been done, and we see during minutes or very long time a washing machine which turns, and we just see the water turning and the laundry in it. It's not all the movie like that, but there's a very important moment on that. And it's all about the meaning of the laundry and the meaning of having it get washed by somebody of the family, and because the laundry goes out of the jail and then comes back, and well, the importance of the laundry washed by somebody. And you say that in a way it is the only thing they own. It made me think that like a home, their clothes could be a home in a way. And in another way, you said it could be another thing, but...
In the prison, there is no laundry in the prison, or...?
I don't know if we can generalize, but it was a movie about that. Or maybe there is, and maybe some people may choose
to have
prefer
family.
Yes, maybe.
Interesting.
I was thinking while you were talking that this is actually how it happens usually, that something bad happens, and the first thing that comes is there has to be somebody responsible, and these people did a bad job and they're awful, and we really don't even think that they might have had a reason to do it that way.
Yeah. I'm sure they did. I'm sure in this case they did. Because generally the volunteers at this place, you know, they're people who are really well-meaning and have a lot of heart and are trying to do their best to help these refugees and to help the organization happen and everything. So I'm sure that there was no... I'm sure they thought they were doing a really good job, you know. And, I mean, they did wash a lot of clothes. There were a lot of clothes in those boxes that had been washed during the night. So, but you're right. We often blame instantly. There has to be a culprit. There has to be a bad guy.
What you say also illustrates once again that it's not enough to be volunteer, to do something for other people. It's not enough to be human. It's not enough to go to some place, but it needs to have an organization. And even with instruction, people don't look at that and can think maybe because they are volunteer, and the difficulty of working with people who are volunteer, and which we cannot have the same exigence that with people who work being paid, and it's very difficult.
Yeah, there are a lot of issues in this. Yeah. There are a lot of issues, yeah. the notion of being paid to do something? Do we do it then less well? Or, as you say, can we have fewer demands on the people because they're not being paid?
Mm.
Yeah, that's true. There's all those issues in this. And I know the woman who's in charge of the volunteers, just in this case, she sent out an email to all of the volunteers with a checklist about the laundry and said, keep it in your pocket and read it, study it, memorize it, whatever. No. But that was, you know, 2 months ago or something.
Mm.
But it's true, huh?
I remember once I was working at that Nairo, and twice I went there for about a year, and twice at the end, before I stopped going, because I started to write my thesis and didn't have time anymore, but I did. I was like the manager in charge of making sure everything goes well, and telling people what to do and when to do it and all. it was really nice, really interesting, a little scary because there were like 500 or 600 people coming to get the food every day for one meal, and I was thinking the way I approached how I related to the volunteers who came and work, and actually some are volunteers and some are how do you say that? What is it? Statue des Anges? Il y avait des
bénévoles,
people who had to, they were like.
C'est une façon de, ils ont condamné à quelque chose et ils viennent travailler là, c'est ça?
Ouais.
Insertion.
Oui,
le travail d'insertion.
Oui, quelque chose comme ça.
C'est comme une peine en fait, je crois.
Travail général.
Intérêt public.
Intérêt
général.
Travail d'intérêt général.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so not all of them were volunteers, but it was about half. I actually did approach it like. I was thinking that I could ask from people if they were okay to do something and to do the work that I was expecting them to do, but I was like, I didn't want to make anyone do anything. I was like, if I'm not going to put any pressure at all on anyone, and if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. And I was like, I'm going to, like, my role as a manager will be to organize things so that it works, but everybody has to do its part, their part in it, and if they don't, if somebody doesn't want to do it that way, we'll try to find another way, and if we can't find any way at all to make it work, it just won't, we won't open or whatever. And I think, I don't know, but it went really well. It seemed to me like everybody was had a good time, I would even say, there. The people who worked. And I felt like it had something, maybe I'm wrong, I don't know, but I felt like it had something to do with it, that I was not. It was like, it felt like letting go of something, you know, saying and thinking, if it doesn't work, it doesn't work, and that's going to be it. I'm going to try to make it work, But that's that'll be it.
Mm.
Okay. That's good.
And it worked.
It worked.
Well, I suppose even if it hadn't worked, it would have worked because.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, something happens.
Something happens.
Let's put it that way. Something happens.
Yeah.
No, but I mean, what you say, the lesson also is even like facing a situation where it's a mess, you bear witness to it. It's like, okay, now what do I do? What do I do from now?
Yeah.
From
what do we do now?
Because that's the past is the past. We don't really understand, but like, okay, now we need to bear witness to the things that is, what is the situation so that I can respond to it most efficiently. That's the...
Exactly.
The
how do we work with the situation? Whatever it is. You know, how do we
even if we don't like it,
yeah.
It's unpleasant, it's a mess, and it's.
Yeah.
And that's holding the rack.
Yeah, exactly.
What's holding the rack?
Just responding to.
Acknowledging that it is as it is.
Mm.
And
whether you like it or not, it's, and then you you could just say, okay, well, I don't like it, I'm leaving, it's too much of a mess, but this would not be responding to the situation.
Yeah.
I mean, it would be responding to the situation, but it wouldn't be really responding in an appropriate manner.
Well, and we have, you know, these what we call the three pure precepts, which we have different ways of interpreting and of naming them, but in Bernie Glassman's formulation, it's the first one is not knowing. Which corresponds to refrain from doing evil, or how does it? What is it?
To cease
from doing evil.
Right.
You know, evil is kind of charged terminology. Cease is kind of charged, but not knowing. So that means let go of my fixed ideas about the situation. So. Let go of it, that these people should do that, and the meals should be served like this, and whatever, you know, whatever it is. Not knowing. I don't know. And then the next one, which is in the traditional version, do good, in Bernie's terminology, is to bear witness. So, I arrive in a situation without having a fixed idea about how it should be. And then I can bear witness to whatever arises. I can just be with what it is. So, you know, I arrive in this, I come to my work at the refugee center and I don't know what will happen. I have an open mind. I arrive at the gate and I realize I forgot my vest that won't allow me to get in. So I'm thinking, when I get there to the gate, this lady in the box is not going to let me in because she's not allowed to let anybody in, you know. She let me in. Okay. Whatever. I find the laundry in a bordel, you know, in a chaos. I just bear witness to that. Okay, this is how it is. Without judging it, with my preconceived notions of how it should be or should not be. You know, it's not easy, but I did it. And at some moments I didn't do it, but whatever, I'm just giving an ideal situation. And then the third one in traditional language is do good for others. And in Bernie's terminology, it's to take action. Sometimes take loving action, sometimes take healing action, but take action. Action that arises from the previous two. So what do we do when we come to the situation? We don't have a judgment about it. We therefore can see it as it is, and how do then we act? So when we talk about appropriate action, what's appropriate arises from the previous two, the position of the previous two. And that's to take in, that's to be empty-handed and holding a rake. That's it. How are we doing on time here?
It's 9:35.
If there's nothing else, yeah.